So excited my next guest stopped by the show. Donna Brown is on the podcast. She's a retired police sergeant, public speaker, very successful author, author of Behind and Beyond the Badge. A very great interview with Donna Brown next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in to the Top Ranked CJ Evolution podcast. Top Ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you would rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, we sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you are doing, wherever you are at. Thank you for doing it. Remember this, in these uncertain times, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. It's an honor to be partnered with an amazing company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of Detectachem, you got to check out their link at the CJEvolution.com website. Protecting your troops from illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. Their application-based technology, handheld, is a must-need for your organization. Check out Detectachem at CJEvolution.com. On to Donna Brown. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show. You're going to love her. Her name is Donna Brown. She's a successful author, public speaker, and a retired police sergeant. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Patrick.
Well, I'm honored to have you. I know we talked a couple of weeks ago on the phone, and I was like, I got to get you on the show because the listeners are going to love you. First of all, I mentioned that you're a retired police sergeant from Tallahassee, correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Thank you for your service. And I ask all Leos, retired, active, who come on, as well as military personnel, and I'm going to ask you the same question, Donna. Why did you want to become a police officer?
In all honesty, I never did. That was the furthest thing from my mind.
Wow.
Right. I moved to Tallahassee. I grew up in east coast of Florida, and I came to Tallahassee to attend Florida State University. Go Noles. Yeah. And really wasn't sure what I wanted to do other than I thought I wanted to work with at-risk youth. And criminology, criminal justice kind of seemed to fit that path at the time. Mm-hmm. And went through, got my degree, and I started applying for jobs. And at that time, and I'm going to date myself here, it was 1979, and everybody wanted women, but they wanted them to have 3 to 5 years of experience in law enforcement. Which back then, that was a very rare bird if you could find that. So one day I happened to look in our local newspaper and they were actually advertising for the Tallahassee Police Department. And I'm like, well, okay, if this is the path I need to go to get where I want to be, then let's do it. And I went through the process, got hired, went through the academy, completed FTO program, and the rest is history.
Wow. And again, thank you for your service. You're a very decorated officer, had a very honorable career.
Thank you.
Now, we talked about this before. So a lot of stuff going on in the world. Donna, you know that. So if somebody, and maybe they have, I imagine they have, you probably have people approach you before and ask you, but I'm going to ask you, I mean, what advice would you give somebody at this point, you know, that wanted to get into law enforcement, you know, given the current environment? And it's a tough job. It's always been a tough job. You know that.
Right.
But what advice would you give some young person right now?
Obviously, yes, things have changed certainly since from when I started to where we are as a profession now, but it's still an absolutely noble profession. And my biggest advice to anybody is, one, get into the job for all the right reasons. Mm-hmm. I would strongly encourage, do ride-alongs, talk to people that are actually doing the job, and get different opinions.
Good advice, yeah.
Before you actually make that choice. But again, do the job for all the right reasons, not to you know, get into chases and put people in jail. And as you know, there's just so much more to the job.
That's a small percentage of that.
Absolutely. But that's what people see. They see that on television and in film, and that's just really not the job. The other is, if they do get the job, is always do the right thing. And sometimes that can be a lonely place, but truly always do the right thing.
Yeah, that's great advice. And if I could just piggyback, and I usually tell people, you know, align yourself. Once you get hired, align yourself with the right people. I'm talking about in the organization. Because as you know, Donna, I mean, you know that there's toxic cops out there, you know, and this job sucks. I can't wait to retire. And then you have the go-getters who are pumped. And not that, you know, they don't have bad days, but that was one of the things I had great mentors when I was a young officer. And, you know, I was able to kind of gravitate towards those people that really took good care of me and mentored me and, you know, taught me well.
And I would agree with that. That's excellent advice. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always tell people too, Donna, and I'm sure, well, I hate to assume, but, you know, I think the vast majority of Americans out there support our brave men and women who are in law enforcement and criminal justice. I just think a lot, they just see what's on TV. I think I'm talking about law enforcement. They see what's on TV and they're like, well, everybody hates us. And that's not the case.
I would agree. And that's one thing the books have afforded me, is some amazing opportunities for a lot of speaking engagements. Yeah. I've been to college campuses for their criminal justice programs, community groups, women's professional groups. And I would agree with you, but the one thing in our discussions, and then I try to gear them where they end up being question and answer, and I'll answer all the tough questions. I don't have an issue with that. But people really don't know what the job is truly like. And when I talk to other law enforcement officers and they ask about my speaking engagements and such, and I'm like, they really want to know. And I said, with the climate as it is, you need to be willing to have those conversations. And I often get, I don't want to talk about it, people just don't understand. And I'm like, if we don't talk about it, people can't understand.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, real quick, one of the questions I almost always end up asking a group is, do you know what happens when you call 911? And of course, the correct short answer is I call and somebody comes. But when I start explaining that someone has to answer the phone and they ask all those what you think are ridiculous questions, there's a reason why. Someone who has to dispatch someone, and I said, you need a law enforcement officer. The officer gets on scene and within a matter of seconds or minutes, they're like, crap. Okay, I need police, I need fire, I need EMS, I need a supervisor, I need forensics, I need a detective. I mean, and I literally watch people's eyes open and jaws drop. And they just look at me and I said, that's for your one phone call.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, education. And there's so many, you know, we just live in a time right now where there's so much information out there. You know, people are going to believe what they're going to believe. And they, you know, a lot of times they just believe what other people say and things like that. But, for the people out there that maybe think, you know, one thing about law enforcement, you know, I mean, all I have to do is just educate themselves. So I'll give you a great example. And you're aware of Citizens Academies, Donna.
Yes.
So I'm a big believer. It's great community policing. It's a great way to connect with citizens. And I tell you what, we had converts come out of that. Not that, you know, I mean, some didn't change them, but a lot of them did. I never knew why two cop cars were on a traffic stop at night. Right. Now I know. Right. Now I know what happens on a crime scene, or I have a good idea why all this stuff is going on. So I think those are great. And to, like you said, you're educating people.
Correct.
It's amazing.
And I think even more now, we need to be doing those things. Mm-hmm. And I love the Citizens Police Academy. I taught every single one of ours from its inception to the time I retired. And I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I've seen converts out of every single class.
So let's talk about your books that are award-winning You know, you won two medals in the Florida Authors and Publishers President Book Awards in nonfiction and political/current events. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's talk about those books, you know, behind and beyond the badge. I mean, what was the catalyst? You know, why did you put pen to paper?
Anger, to be very honest.
Hey, motivator.
It was in 2016. It was not long after the Michael Brown, Ferguson, Missouri situation. And all I saw in the media, social media, was negative about cops, but the profession as a whole. And it just really made me angry for obvious reasons for me. You know, there's over 800,000 law enforcement officers in this country, and the vast majority are good cops, let alone good people. So I was like, what can I do? And my goal was to humanize the badge, because people just never stop to think there's a real person behind the badge just like them. So I came up with the idea of, I wanted to highlight and tell the stories of individual police officers who actually had done the job or were doing the job. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know, and I spent 10 years supervising our department's homicide unit. And I'm like, I could have never have done my job without fire and EMS and our dispatchers. And we were blessed to have a full-time, fully staffed victim advocate unit, which I know a lot of departments don't. So I included them in the book. So when I started pitching this idea, and with volume one, it's people that I knew or had actually worked with. And when I started pitching the idea, I was surprised how many people were like, yes, great idea. I'll be more than happy to participate. And I started out with giving people questionnaires, and it kind of forced them to put their thoughts on paper. And what I got back was absolutely more than I ever could have imagined. They really opened up their hearts and dug deep. And the response with volume one was not what I expected. It was really overwhelmingly positive. And that said, it started opening up all kinds of avenues. I had explorers reach out to me. Your book is one of the first I've ever read that gives me a kind of a clue as to what to expect if I do one of these jobs. Family members who had first responders, you know, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, those types of things. And so I really hadn't planned on writing volume two, but I really got pushed to, like, people want to know more. So yeah. Personally, and I love volume one, personally, I think volume two even goes deeper. And to a person, everyone who, and I'm honored that they let me tell their stories, told me that it was healing or therapeutic to actually put some of their thoughts on paper. And I said, you know, if I never sell a copy of the book, that in itself was well worth it. You know, and I also included in volume one, a woman whose husband was killed in the line of duty in California. And in volume two, a woman whose son was killed in the line of duty. And I thought those were also perspectives that people needed to hear.
Yeah.
So they've kind of taken off from there. I'm very proud of them. I said, I'm humbled that everybody trusted me to tell their stories.
Yeah. And the world is better off for you for you putting this out there, Donna. And I love what you said about therapeutic. I mean, as you know, I'm preaching to the choir. You've seen stuff that through your career that got to you, that, you know, that bothered you, obviously. Same with me. And my point I'm trying to make is, when I wrote my book, every time, right now, it's therapy for me talking to you, selfishly.
I agree.
Because it's good to talk about this stuff. And that's one of the things, as you know, with the first responder community, and I'm just speaking from my experience, I was taught to suppress. And I was taught, you don't talk about this stuff. And you don't, you know, and I got that from the military. I brought it into law enforcement. And I used to just stuff way down. You can't do that. I mean, there's only so much trauma and stuff people can see, right?
Absolutely. And again, being hired in 1979, that was the rule of thumb. You didn't talk about it. You didn't show emotion. You didn't any of those things. And I was also only the fifth female hired at our department. So there was that added, you know, can't cry, you can't show emotion, you know, because, you know, you're so in the community themselves, we were still such an oddity. So you really, I had it twofold. You really had to stuff things down.
Yeah. And I imagine being a female, you know, back then it was very, I mean, you get a lot of people not wanting to back you up, other officers, you know, you can't do this, you know, I mean, I don't know, I'm assuming, you know.
Well, you know, that's kind of a long story, but honestly, yes, there were some immediate supervisors and such who really did their darndest to try to make sure that I failed the FTO program, which I didn't.
Yeah.
But I had two older guys on my squad who saw what was happening and went above and got me moved to a different scenario. And to this day, my FTO, he and I are still very good friends, and I owe my career to him. But as far as officers backing me up, those types of things, I really didn't encounter that. And after people got used to me, some of the guys would come up to me and go, you know, I'd rather answer calls with you because I don't get in half as many fights as I used to get into.
I know, because you probably brought that. I mean, you're a great communicator, I can tell. And you bring that calm, right? Whereas, you know, you used to piss me off, Donna. There's always one guy, it's a male. It's always a male cop, in my experience, that, you know, you get things settled down and he goes there and he amps things up.
Yep. name a few.
There's always that jackass who does that. And you're like, you just get off the scene.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. The community here in Tallahassee is really, even though it's the state capital, we've got two major universities here and that, it's still pretty much old South. And so I said, having women on the police force we had to win over the community as well. So.
Well, obviously you did. And we're glad you did. Now, if you had a chance to change anything during your career, would you have? What would you change? Or wouldn't you change it? You wouldn't change anything.
As far as my career path, the jobs I got to do, no, I wouldn't change any of that at all. What I would change is when I go back and look at the stress part, especially the 10 years in homicide, I don't think I really paid enough attention to the detectives on my squad in that respect. And I think I could have done a much better job.
Yeah. Well, I think I could have done that too as a supervisor in years past, because we just, not that it's, you know, we need to be more aware, or at least I needed to be more aware, but we weren't. I'm not trying to make excuses, but the point I'm trying to make is that we didn't talk about it openly.
Right.
You know, we weren't educated as much as we are now with PTS and PTSD or whatever you want to call it. Some people call it PTSI. A lot of cops don't like PTSD because the word disorder is like a stigma.
Right.
So they want to call it an illness, because an illness maybe implies that you can get over it.
Right.
But, you know, it was a different time back then, you know? And so I think, yeah, I could have been more aware, and I could have been more, you know, asking questions. Hey, you know, because we all see it, and you've seen it, Donna. You see some, you know, it's just, you know, behaviors. I mean, okay, well, you got a star detective over here who's just kicking ass and is making good cases. And then all of a sudden, you know, production or, you know, his attitude drops. Well, something's going on.
Well, and that's, I had one in particular who was, you're right, one of my stars in homicide. And I, when I look back on it, I actually probably added to his stress, because he was kind of my go-to guy.
Yeah.
And there was an on-duty incident, and it ended up costing him his job. And when he and I sat and talked, I mean, he was just in tears, and I had no idea. I mean, he freely admitted what he did and what happened, but I was like, I had no idea, and I missed all of the signals. And yeah. Like I said, that kind of haunts me.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, you know, when I got promoted to commander, you know, I was in charge of, you know, the sergeants, all the patrol, mm-hmm. but you know, my sergeants were the point of contact, you know, I'd check in with them. And, you know, I remember it had been some time since I had gotten with my sergeants, you know, and just had a discussion with them. Hey, you know, catch up with them. Hey, how's it going? You know, how's the family? And I remember one sergeant in particular, I called him in and, you know, everybody's freaking out that, no, you're not in trouble. I just want to BS with you and see how you're doing. And I said, well, you know, how's your wife and two kids? He was like, you know, Commander, I got divorced 6 months ago. Mm. And I was like, Don, I felt like crap.
Yeah.
I was like, and we're not some huge department like NYPD. We're relatively small. And I was like, I just felt like crap for a long time because I should have known that.
Right.
Not that I want to get into his business. That's not the point. But, you know, I should have been, you know, meeting with my supervisors more on a regular basis to kind of, you know, check in with them and make sure they're doing okay.
Right.
So
I hear you.
Yeah. So what we talked about, you know, at the beginning, we talked about law enforcement and, you know, what advice would you give them? What challenges, you know, do you think, and that's probably a broad question I'm going to ask anyway, you've done it for a long time, you know, what challenges do you think law enforcement has going into the future?
I just had this discussion the other day with someone, and it actually was an incident that I saw here locally, and very innocent. But I think, like when I started and back then, just wearing the uniform garnered respect from the community. And that's not the case now. Yeah. That respect truly has to be earned. And it goes both ways, absolutely. But this was, our county had a mandatory mask ordinance in place for many, many, many months. And just a couple months ago, it was rescinded. And I went to a small locally owned business, and they still had a sign on the door saying, please still wear a mask when you enter our business. So I did. I put my mask on, and every employee and every other person in that business had a mask on, except one person. And I watched this person, who I knew personally, was a supervisor at my old agency. And they were readily identifiable with the polo shirt that they had on. Identifying them is the only person in there without a mask on. And I didn't say anything, didn't approach this person. I stood off to the side and I just watched. And the number of people that walked by just shook their head.
Just put the damn mask on.
But shook their head, rolled their eyes. And I'm like, that's to me, and a lot of people may disagree with me, that was a total lack of respect for that business owner, for the other people in there. That person lost respect for themselves as an officer, lost respect for the department. And it's the little things that, like I said, I think respect is one of the biggest challenges right now. And yeah. It's all about optics sometimes.
Exactly.
And it's not the big things. It's little things like that. I was really disappointed.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, the fact that he had his polo shirt with his agency logo on mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. again, it, you know, maybe it would have been a little bit different. It still would have been disrespectful maybe if he walked in there without a polo shirt with the, you know, the badge or whatever on it. But you're right. It's the optics behind it. So I guarantee mm-hmm. you, and I don't know, well, I'm not going to guarantee, I don't know what happened. I'm willing to bet, Donna, and maybe you know, that the police department got some complaints on this guy.
Actually, they did.
Yes. Well, they're shocking. You know, one of your people is not wearing a mask. I mean, like you said, you're exactly right. It's the optics. You know, just like I said, just put on the damn mask. Yep. Is it gonna kill you?
Or in my opinion, if you can find another business that's similar and can provide the services that you want and doesn't require a mask, then take your business elsewhere. Yeah. And actually, I ran into the deputy chief, who I've known for years, and did not give this person's name, didn't even say male or female. And I just ran that by, and they're like, you would be surprised at how many complaints we get just like that. And they're like, we don't get it. We've preached to them. Everybody's tired of wearing a mask. We get it. But again, optics.
I get it. I'm not a big mask person, but you got to look at the, you're representing the, you know this, you're representing the police department.
Right.
You know, you're going out there, whether you hate them, you know, the mask or not, just put on the mask. It's going to save a lot of trouble down the road.
Right.
Because like you said, in our current environment, Donnie, you know this, and the listener knows it. You know, we need every chance, opportunity we can get to kind of turn perception around.
Absolutely.
You know, and yeah, that's amazing. That's a great example. So I agree with you. You know, respect, you know, going forward is a challenge. Any other challenges you see?
I think education is, we have to get away from that mentality of us against them.
Yeah.
And somehow we've gotten there. And I know the media doesn't help. The negativity that's going on doesn't help, but it's really not us against them.
No, it's not.
And that mentality has got to be turned around. I don't think that's going to be an easy task.
Well, I think it's a culture, you know, within an organization. Right. And I was, you know, brought up in my career. Yeah, us against them. If they don't have a star or a badge, they're one of them.
Right.
And you don't trust them. And it wasn't until later on in my career, you know, that when I got married, my wife didn't have anything to do with law enforcement. She didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. And then I remember she was like, well, why don't we go out and meet some of my friends? This was years ago. And I was like, what? I'm not going to, can I run them first? See if they have any warrants or anything like that? Can I get their socials? You know, and she was like, no. But, you know, then I started going out and I started having good conversations. Now her friends are my friends.
Right.
And I'm, you know, it took me a while to realize this, Donna, and you know this, the majority of people out there are good people.
Yes.
It's just that small percentage of people, the frequent flyers that we deal with.
Correct.
Yeah. And you're right, man. It's just that perception, you know, that us against them. And you're right. It's a culture, and it starts in the academy, at least most academies.
Well, and of course, I've been retired for quite some time, but there's a scenario that always sticks in my mind. I was still a field training sergeant. And this is back in the day when we were still doing paper reports. We didn't have the in-car computers. And I was collecting reports during the shift. And we're, you know, that typical sitting side by side that the community thinks we're not doing anything. And
optics, like you said.
Right. And the rookie got dispatched to a call, and I'm sitting there, and the call was a elderly person had locked themselves out of their home and was just really distraught, needed help, didn't know what to do, and they called the police. And we weren't real busy at the time, so we had the time and we had the officer available. And the rookies, I'll never forget the statement was, and I couldn't believe he said it was, we have to answer calls like that crap. And his FTO looked at me like, oh my God. And I just looked at her, the FTO, and I said, back the car up and get him out of the car.
Exactly.
And she did. And I've never lost my temper or cursed at a recruit, anything. And I got out of the car and I'm like, what is wrong with you? You know, these are the calls that you should live for. You actually can go and help someone out, you know? And that's when I figured a lot of the recruits we were hiring at the time grew up on TV watching cop shows, and cop shows don't show you doing those kinds of things.
But like we talked about, that's 80% of the job right there.
Right.
You know, I'm glad you laid into them. I've laid into cops for similar things.
Yep. You know,
why are we doing this? It's a civil call. Well, I don't care. We're going to go.
Right.
Especially in a smaller community, people expect that.
Right.
That is part of your job. So yeah, damn.
And
kids.
We're, well, now, the department's got, I think their authorized strength now is about 460. Mm-hmm. And of course, like every other department in the country, there's a lot of vacancies and stuff. So, I mean, we're not a small agency. We're certainly not, you know, huge. But I'm like, and that's when I started to see a culture shift with recruits. And I was like, oh no, we've got to nip that in the bud, as Barney used to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And you made up a good point. I think that's in my opinion, that's a big challenge going into the future is, you know, people, well, you probably know, I hate to assume again, a lot of caps I talk to, Donna, they're looking for an exit ramp. They're looking for a way out, unfortunately. And then of course, you know, it's, you know, recruiting, you know, and retaining, you know, it's, you know, thank God we still have brave men and women who want to serve.
Absolutely.
But it is very, very difficult. You know, I have a buddy who works for a big, you know, department back east. They're down like 40 something cops for that agency is a big deal.
Well, I said my old agency, the authorized strength is like 460 and they've got 50 vacancies.
Wow. And they're probably, and you know, again, I'm preaching to the choir and the listener probably knows this, you know, you might have 50 openings, you might have 100 applicants. That doesn't mean you're going to hire all those 50 by the time backgrounds are done and all this other stuff.
Well, and that's one thing I tell people too, because I often ask the question, especially if it's a local speaking engagement. I'm like, do you have any clue how many officers are actually working the street right now? Oh my God, I get 100, 150, you know, and I'm like, you know, depending what time of day, I'm like, you might have 40 or 50, depending.
And they're like,
and
what?
They just look at me, right. And then I said, you know, when you just hire an officer, you don't put them in a car and they go to work. I said, if they have to complete the academy and the FTO program, in-house training, I said, it's close to a year.
Yeah. And some of them don't make it.
Correct. And that's, again, part of it. People just look at me and they're like, I have no idea. And I'm like, that's why these conversations need to be had. Take every opportunity you have to educate people. And I don't mean from a smart ass standpoint.
Just education.
Right. To truly have those conversations and be willing to answer some of the tough questions.
And you're exactly right. You mentioned, you know, most people get what they know about law enforcement off television and movies. I think a third of the shows out there are like CSI, you know, and all this other stuff, which are entertaining.
Right.
But it paints a picture where we're just running and gunning all the time, kicking in doors, doing SWAT stuff. But
when you talked about, you know, a lot of the CSI shows and obviously working in homicide for as long as I did, I mean, forensics and crime scene people were, I mean, we worked hand in hand with them. And I've really been pushing for some of these mental health, first responder mental health organizations to start including forensics. And initially, some of these conversations are like, well, I don't understand. And I'm like, okay, let's just say I talked to somebody, excuse me, who was at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Okay, you got 49 bodies.
Yeah.
Okay, and I said, any mass shooting? Marjorie Stoneman here. Sadly, we've had a couple here in Florida that were major. I said, okay, those crime scenes are not processed and worked in an hour.
No.
A lot of those aren't processed and worked in a day. Some take days to do. And I said, you know, and this one person I talked to said, you know, as they're in the crime scene, they're hearing all these cell phones go off.
Yeah.
And they're the cell phones of the victims.
Yeah.
You know, and they're assuming, you know, it's family trying to find out, are they okay or whatever. But I'm like, these people see it. They have to measure it. They have to photograph it. They have to collect it. They have to step over it. They have to get in it. And I'm like, they absolutely should be included in any first responder mental health, but they're not technically a first responder. And I heard someone talk the other day and they didn't call them first responders. They called them responders. And I really like that.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I mean, they're on the scene. They're seeing this horrific scene. Mm-hmm. So they should be part of that. And now you talked about your speaking really quick, Donna. Let's talk about that for a moment or two.
Sure.
What are you speaking about when you go speak? I mean, are you speaking about behind and beyond the badge, or are you talking about, you know, the mental health aspect, or are you just a collaboration of everything?
The reason I'm generally there excuse me, is the books get me in the door. And I talk about the books, why I wrote them, just talk about the professions. Mm-hmm. And we have these conversations, and I said, there's not a question or topic that I won't discuss. Mm-hmm. And we do talk about, and we talk about the mental health. And when I start, especially when I just, that short scenario I just told you about, like with the forensics people, and I'm like, and for me individually, my 10 years in homicide, I supervised 561 death investigations.
Wow.
I said, you cannot do that and no. see that without it not
exactly
affecting you somehow. And people just look at me and I'm like, you know, personally, I said, I've seen just about every possible way a human being can die. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to get graphic, you've seen it too, you know, yes. dismemberment, yeah. beheadings, yeah. stabbing, yeah. shootings, yeah. hangings, industrial accidents,
yeah.
You know, which we worked all of those types of, not just homicides, we worked all those kinds of things, suicides and all of that. And I'm like, so anyone who ever tells you they're not bothered or affected, I'm sorry, Pinocchio, they're lying.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, everybody faces a traumatic event in their life at some point. Maybe it's a car accident. Maybe it's a death of a family member. But that doesn't happen over and over again. You know that, Donna.
Right.
When
right.
you're in homicide or you're on the street in a rough area or even not in a rough area, you're seeing that thing sometimes, that stuff sometimes on a daily basis.
Well, and I had a person at one of my talks tell me, cops can't get PTSD. They didn't go to war.
Oh.
And so many people associate PTSD with our military. And I understand that. I truly do. And then we get into those discussions where, you know, PTSD or PTS or PTSI, like you said, however you want to call it, there's different forms. One can be one particular tragic situation. Or for most cops, it's cumulative.
Yes. Yes, and, exactly right.
And again, as we have those discussions, people look at me and they go like, oh my God, I never thought of that. And yeah. that's why I said I'm just so passionate about having the discussions, and my goal is to humanize
yeah.
the badge.
Oh, we are very happy that you're out there educating and doing your great work, Donna. As we wrap up, I want to ask you about, again, your books. And is there any suggestions you would have for any aspiring authors out there? I think most cops have a book in them.
You're right.
You know, most of them do. With all the crap and not just bad stuff, but good stuff too.
Right.
What advice would you give for people out there, you know, maybe kicking around the idea of putting pen to paper like you did?
Just write, number one.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, well, I don't really have a story to tell, just sit down and write, just start, or start, you know, a journal, and which ends up, you know, down the road could be your manuscript or whatever. Just write. Find somebody else who is a fellow law enforcement officer, whether active or retired, that is also an author. And I did that because I knew nothing about writing a book. And I actually worked with a guy who writes under a pen name. Now, he writes murder mysteries, which I absolutely love his books. And poor guy, he must have answered a gazillion questions I had. And he was so patient with me. And so now I try to pay it forward. If anybody reaches out to me, I'm more than happy to share what I know. But the other thing, and you and I kind of talked about this, if you spend any amount of money on publishing a book, get your manuscript professionally edited.
Absolutely. That's one of the hardest things, like you said, we talked about is, you know, the editing process. I had my wife and other people look at it because I'm not good at that stuff.
Right.
So I want people to look at it and be critical. Don't get like your best friend to do it because they're not, you know what I mean? I mean,
right.
you know, or even spouses sometimes, they're not going to tell you the hard truth. My wife was like, yeah, this sucks right here. You need to change it.
And that's like, great. Okay.
Which is awesome because you want that kind of feedback.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I knew nothing too about, I had a Catholic school upbringing, or at least
I did too.
Grade. So, you know, I mean, spelling and grammar, punctuation, that was like ingrained in you. Yeah. Well, though, when writing a manuscript or getting going through the editing process, they're like, there are, as you know, there's no, the rules change.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn those types of things. And that's, you know, there's nothing, I mean, I'm an avid reader as well. And it's hard for me when I get into a book and I see the misspellings or it's hard for me to even finish the book.
And
right. And I do try to read a lot of books by fellow law enforcement officers and try to support them as best I can. So that would, awesome. That would be my advice.
That is awesome, Will. Donna Brown, you're an amazing guest. Thank you for coming on the show. If people want to reach out to you and, of course, find your Behind and Beyond the Badge series, volume 1 and 2, where can they find you and where can they find these great books?
I do have a website, which is behindandbeyondthebadge.com. The books are sold on Amazon. They actually, any bookstore, if you have a favorite bookstore, they can look it up and they can order it for you if you want to do it that way. Volume 1 is available, ebook, paperback, hardcover. Volume 2, the same, except I also have that in audio. And I'm on social media. The book has a Facebook page.
It's awesome.
I have Twitter and Instagram. I'm not a huge fan of social media, but to do this, you have to be out there. So,
well, you and I connected, I think, on LinkedIn.
Yes, sir, we did.
That's how I found you. So.
It has its positives.
Yeah. Well, Donna Brown, thank you so much, ma'am, for coming on the show. Much success to you.
Thank you,
in
Patrick.
The future, I hope to talk to you soon. And everything we talked about, folks, including the books and how to reach out to Donna, is going to be linked up in the show notes. Donna, take care, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.